out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, the 25th of May, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As it's Friday, I'm very pleased to welcome Florian Geyer from Mysterium Fasces to the show. Florian, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing very well, Sven, everything considered. It's poised to be, I think, a thunderous and stormy day here in Ottawa, but it's always a pleasure to be back on Radio Arian for another edition of the Daily Nationalist.
Well, we've got thunderstorms on the way here as well, and it is a bit of a stormy day. We've got a bit of bad news that we should discuss before we get into the meat of the podcast, really. A couple of rather distressing incidents today. Alison Chablot has been found guilty of causing a grossly offensive message to be sent. And this is the court case that's been going on for a couple of years, and it's basically a Jewish lobby group trying to sneak a new Holocaust denial law through the courts. And they've been quite brazen about it. The leader of this group, Gideon Falter, he has said that this sentencing shows that Great Britain will not tolerate Holocaust denial. And of course, there are no Holocaust denial laws in Britain. We supposedly have free speech. And that's been the whole point of this all along. He wanted to twist the meaning of this law about sending a grossly offensive message and make it apply to Holocaust denial. And it looks like he's got his way. I'm certain she's going to appeal, but the judge has said that this could meet the threshold for a custodial sentence, which means she could end up with a prison sentence. And on top of that, Tommy Robinson was filming outside Leeds Court, a particularly nasty Muslim rape gang. There was a trial there, and he went there to film the trial, obviously, to report on it so that people knew what was going on. And he was arrested for breaching the peace. Now, a normal arrest of breach of the peace, he would just be released. But apparently he's on a suspended sentence, which means that if he breaks the law, then he goes into prison. And the suspended sentence is for 13 months. And Caelan Robinson has just tweeted out that he's been given this 13-month sentence. So it's not going too well in Britain at the moment. I don't know if you've got any... I thought we'd just better bring that up so listeners are aware of this that's going on. But have you got any thoughts on that you'd like to share with us, Florian, before we move into some more on the Sermon on the Mount?
Nothing particularly insightful that I think our listeners don't already understand. The grip of tyranny is squeezing ever more tightly over the nation of Britain, and unfortunately, this is the result, I guess. And I just don't see things changing their course or being ameliorated in any sense until there's a change of heart, frankly, in the nation as a whole. That's what will be required to lift ourselves out of this fugue and fatigue and filth and all these kind of various other nasty ailments which have parasitically attached themselves to our corpus.
We look forward to the day of the Lord. I would suggest people watch Mark Collett's video from last week, which is about a consultation that is taking place over sentencing guidelines for hate speech cases. It may take a while to fill out the forms. It took me 3 hours last night. But fill out the forms and let them know that you do not agree with them giving 6-year sentences to people just for words. It is really important that people actually fill this form out and and send it in, because they haven't set this in stone yet, but that's what they wish to do. And they want to hear from the public what the public's view is on this. So it is important that people fill these forms out. You can do it all online. As I say, it takes a long time, and it's not about the actual statutory wording itself, because they've already passed this law. What it's about is sentencing guidelines. So what you need to be saying is, I do not believe that there should be any custodial sentence over hate speech issues or words to that effect. But it does explain all of it, and Mark Cullough has made a video about it, and he's put a link in the description. So I would advise people to do that. I mean, that could end up helping us. It could end up reducing the sentencing, at least, even if we can't change these odious laws. So there is at least something that we can do about it. Anyway, to get back to today's program, as I say, we're going to be continuing with the Sermon on the Mount, which is a speech of Jesus Christ to his disciples. It wasn't to everybody. It's been interpreted by the modern day church that it applies to Muslims, Jews, the enemies of God. But it was actually just spoken to his disciples, and it was meant for his disciples and for their disciples. And it was also explicitly meant just for the children of your people, which we discussed last time. And we got up to verse 13, which I think is very prescient for nationalists, especially for the white race, basically. And this verse 13, it says, "Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost his savour, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under the foot of men." And I take that as meaning, if you don't have salt, if salt has got no flavour to it, then where are you going to get salt from? And if white people stop behaving like white people, who else is going to behave like us? Who else is going to build civilization? Who else is going to have mercy? Who else is going to have a system of law? Who else is going to ensure that justice is done? Nobody. It's white people that do all of this, and we're the only ones that are capable of doing it. You know, we have to pull our socks up and set a good example. That's what this is saying, I believe. We have the ability to set a good example. We have the ability to build and innovate, and that is what we should be doing. We shouldn't be wasting all our resources on other races and other nations that aren't capable of doing these things. If we lose whatever it is that makes us white, then there is nobody else that's going to take over and continue civilization. So I think this doesn't just apply to Christians. This applies to white people. If we're gone, there's nobody else to replace us. The same as if salt goes, there's no other substitute that you can have for salt. And I think that's what the point of this is, Florian, this verse.
Right. I think that you're very kind of close on the ball here. I mean, so one of the difficulties about scripture is that especially it is so obscure and difficult to understand for the mind of a modern because of the nature of the context. There are so many assumptions in the writing of the Gospels and of the speech of Christ and the teachings of the apostles that do not easily translate to postmodern Babylonian Western society. So in the ancient world, salt was an extremely, extremely valuable commodity because you could use salt to preserve meat, primarily. And so it enabled you to, store fish and game for very long periods of time. And in a world without refrigeration, and this was critical. I mean, this has supported entire communities, especially during, wintertime or other periods of the year when, access to fresh meat was not easily available. And so salt was seen as this not only flavor giving, spice, but life-giving in that it preserved the kind of the corpse and the nutrition and so on so that it could be feasted upon later for sustenance. And so what Christ is telling us is exactly this, that if we, the kingdom of heaven, which is manifest incarnate on the earth in the church, which is what he is inaugurating here with the speech from the mount, that in the kingdom of heaven, it is the leaven of the earth. It is the salt of the earth, that the grace of God is what supports the firmament of reality, and that if we ourselves lose that grace and we lose our saltiness, so to speak, if we stop being supports for the cosmos, however meager we are able to produce that saltiness, then we become good for nothing. There's an expression, you know, what good is an atheist peasant, right? I mean, and so when he says, well, if you're good, in the ancient world, when you would have salt and it would lose its saltiness or it would lose its efficacy after a long period of time, there was specific means of disposing of it. So you couldn't just, you know, throw it into the gutter or into the bin or whatever, because this would ruin, the aquifers and it would destroy, you know, I mean, think about it. You know, if you salt somebody's garden or salt the earth, it destroys all of the life that's inside there. And so there were actually laws in some places requiring you had to throw your salt onto the road, because then it would be, you know, safely ground up by the feet, basically into sand. It would just disintegrate into nothing. There was no worry of it destroying the environment around it. And so this is exactly what Christ is saying. Is he is saying that we have to preserve our saltiness, our leaven, which is our faith and the good works and the love that comes out of that faith, or we are, you know, ultimately useless. We're fit for destruction. To claim to have the title of saltiness, but to have no salt.
Yeah, it's like when they say a man is worth his salt. You know, it's value. It's of great value. And we still say things today are salty.
Well, salary, the term salary comes from payment of salt to Roman soldiers as an alternative for gold currency.
There you go. And the next few verses are all on a similar theme. They say, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. So it's saying, stand up. People can see you. Stand up and speak. It says, neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Now, I take this to mean that if you have a gift, if you're capable of doing something, you know, you should be doing that, and you should be doing it for your people. Like, you know, we're making these podcasts. We're doing this for our people. We're not just talking to our friends about these things in quiet, as if we've got a candle and it's hidden under a bushel, but we're making it public so that people can benefit from what we are saying. And I think that's what this is saying. If you have a gift, then you should be using it. You should be utilizing it, and you should be giving thanks for it as well. It's, you know, because it doesn't come from you, which takes us back to the first verse, really, which is saying, if you've got gifts, you must be humble. You must accept that these gifts come from God. They don't come from you, and they are there for glorying God. In other words, if God and Christ is the truth, it's for glorifying the truth. It's for speaking the truth. We should be speaking the truth regardless of the persecution. Again, it's another theme all the way through this, is that if you do speak up, you do speak the truth, you do the right thing, then you will be persecuted for that. But at the same time, you will affect so many other people, because they will see your light shining, and it will affect them, and it will help them in their own lives. And that's how I interpret these three, Florian.
What I was saying before, I think, continues on into this verse. The whole idea is that the grace of God is like his light. It's this life-giving and life-enabling function and operation. And so the kingdom of heaven on earth, the church, is just the manifestation of God's light, of God's truth on the earth, of Christ. That's who it is. And so he's telling us, indeed, all of these things that you have said, that we ourselves, created in the image and likeness of God, have this light within us, or the capacity to bear this light within us. And when that is within us, especially the light of faith, but any other life-giving quality that we have, we should strive to develop it and to cultivate it and to share it with our neighbors, with our brothers and sisters, for the common benefit of our folk, of our people. And to a greater extent, he's speaking also of the church, that the church itself is a great light to the world, and that it can never be hidden, and that the church is destined it has a public destiny, I guess you could say, a social destiny, and that even under the oppression of darkness and so forth, it's not capable of being extinguished. And I think modern times are proof plus as any that deformation and degeneration and misappropriation of the church, or elements of her, images of her, and so forth, do not affect her essence and her very nature.
I think there's also that verse where it says the church will last, and not even the gates of hell will will be able to prevail against it, something like that.
That's right.
The church will always be there, is what it's effectively saying. Well, the next verse, again, this is a really important one that I think the Antichrists seem to miss out. It says, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled." So what are you saying there is, no, the New Testament does not supersede the Old Testament. It's the fulfillment of the Old Testament. The laws that are in that Old Testament are exactly the same as the day that they were made. They last right until the end, until heaven and earth pass. Those laws are eternal. No adulteration, no sodomy, no usury. All those laws from the Old Testament, they still apply today. And the prophets of the Old Testament, the ones that many people today will ignore and try and say, well, the New Testament is different. The New Testament is all about love and the Old Testament was all about hate. That's nonsense. And what the prophets were prophesying was Christ coming. That's the point of the New Testament. It's telling us the fulfillment of these prophecies. And there are still prophecies that we're still waiting for them to come true today. I mean, it predicted everything. That was the test of whether a prophet was speaking the truth, or whether he was a genuine prophet from God, was the fact that he was speaking the truth, and what they said was going to occur did occur. I mean, they even knew right down to the year that Jesus was coming in this particular time. They knew when the temple was going to be destroyed. It was all in the book of Daniel and these revelations. Alexander the Great coming along. That was all predicted. And Vespasian and Titus, they all fitted into it. And these are prophecies that were written hundreds of years before these events came to pass. So what he is saying here is, no, this isn't something new. This is the old. It's eternal. It's timeless. There isn't an old and new. I am here to fulfill what you have already heard about, and there's going to be even more coming until heaven and earth pass away. None of it should be changed. The law is exactly the same now as it was back then. Whatever God says is eternal. Otherwise, you make God out to be a liar. If he makes these laws up in the Old Testament and you think that they no longer apply, you know, it's because we have ignored them that our societies are in this situation that they are in. It's because we've gone back on these laws, which we had for millennia, these moral laws that nobody dared question. And now we have questioned them and we've changed them and we've brought all hell has broken loose in our countries because of it. I mean, it's quite an important verse, this, isn't it?
A very important verse. I mean, it's critical. Here's the thing, is there's so much about the Sermon on the Mount in the Old Testament that would have been obvious to the disciples of Christ, but to us is veiled in mystery. Like, to begin with, it would be obvious to anybody who's familiar with the Old Testament that Christ right now is sitting in the figure of Moses, that he's sitting on top of the mountain or the hill, and he's speaking as a lawgiver to his people, the people of Israel in the church, the kingdom of heaven on earth, which he has just inaugurated, which he has just announced. And so Christ himself, if you believe what he says, he is the lawgiver who spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai. And so that is who is speaking in the benedictions and in the Beatitudes and so on. It is the lawgiver on Sinai who Moses saw face to face. And now the difference between the Old Covenant and the New Covenant is precisely that, is that in the Old Covenant, Moses saw the back parts of God, and even still he was, you know, illuminated for weeks afterwards. Whereas now in the New Covenant, we get to see God face to face, and our encounter with his light is direct and unmediated, except by him as a man, being the high priest between heaven and earth. And so what this is saying is exactly correct, that the moral law that we're given in the Old Testament is a reflection of the one true God, and that the purpose of Christ is to come and to fulfill the meaning of that law, which was and which is where people become confused and get themselves tangled up, because the law is designed to bring us closer to God. That's the only reason why we have the law. The law is the expression of the love of God, the grace of God on the earth. And it's a guideline for how we ought to conform ourselves to the life that God provides for us. The law is just a manifestation, a written form of the regularity of conduct that is ordained by the Creator. That's all that it is. It's not the penal codes and the sanctions and all of that. That's a separate that comes after it. And so really the law himself is Christ, because he is the Logos. He is the Word, the speaker, the lawgiver. And so that is who our law is. It's Christ. And he was the one who gave it to Moses in the Old Testament. And he has come now. And in the sermon, he has fulfilled it. This is the whole point. And so these are critical, absolutely critical to understand. And I mean, for the disciples, this was easy for them because they had all of that context where we are so alienated from all of that.
He makes references as well. He makes references later on. You may have heard this or you may have heard that. And he's referring to specific verses. I mean, all he's doing here is refining what has been said before. You know, he's not contradicting it. If people think that there's anything in the New Testament that contradicts whatever is in the Old, then they're the ones at fault. I mean, this is what he says here. He hasn't come to destroy the law. He's come to fulfill it. And then he says, whoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. I would say that you know, this isn't saying that there's going to be a severe punishment of people, but he's saying that they're going to be the least in the kingdom of heaven if they break these commandments. But whoever teaches them, they shall be called great. And that's what we should be doing, is setting a good example and keeping to these laws. I mean, it's quite clear that there's no new commandments or changing of what was there before. There's just a refinement of that. And that's what he's saying here. So the people who think that we should be turning the other cheek to the enemies of God, or opening up the gates to everyone, or giving everything that we've got to Muslims or Jews. No, because that's all, you know, that's all dealt with in the Old Testament. All the ways that our society should be governed is dealt with in the Old Testament. And it's assumed that the people that he's speaking to understand this, because it was his disciples that he was speaking to. So they knew what he was referring to. And people today, if they don't know their Bibles and they just read the New Testament, then they're going to think he's saying something different to what he is. And I think that's where the source of a lot of our problems are, really, Florian, is people that don't read the Old Testament.
Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely correct. And there's no way that you can understand it without having a foundation in the Old Testament. And this is one of the things that makes the heresy of Marcion so stupid and despicable and gay, is the idea that, like, there's some different God in the Old Testament. It is only an idea that can be entertained out of bold-faced ignorance or deliberate deceit and corruption. Because this is the first thing that, when you sit down in an academic setting and you begin to study the Synoptic Gospels or even the Gospel of John, is you realize how married they are, how intimately set in context they are within the Old Testament. There's no distinction or deviation, that they form one part of an organic whole with it. And so this is it's just doubly important to reinforce every time we get the opportunity. And so, yeah, I mean, but Christ kind of goes on to get at what I was talking about here. And so he says that the law will not pass away, but that if your righteousness does not exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, then you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. And so this oftentimes confuses a lot of people, but it's very simple. It's because for the scribes and the Pharisees, they began to worship themselves. The object of the law was not relationship and obedience and worship to to God. But it was the satisfaction of pridefulness, of their penal codes. They began to worship themselves. And this is this is even like the Pharisees themselves, the rabbis will admit this in their own Talmudic writings later on, that the reason why the temple was destroyed was because the priesthood within it had begun to commit the abomination of desolation, because they were worshiping themselves and their own intrigue and power over the Lord God. And so, you know, ironic that they couldn't learn from such a lesson, but here we are. And so for us, you know, our righteousness consists of trying to obey that law in Christ specifically, is that Christ is the mediator for us between ourselves and our sinfulness in the law, which is the process of correction of that sinfulness and that behavior, and righteousness, the kingdom of heaven, blessedness, eternal life. And that the glory of Christ God is that because Christ is able to take our human nature and to purify it and to divinize it, and he himself is able to follow the law with perfection and offer himself to God the Father, that in Christ we ourselves can overcome the unrighteousness which is inherent to our corrupt human character. And that his sacrifice on the cross and his divinizing suffering makes up for all of our own deficits.
I think it's also saying there, you know, where it says your righteousness must exceed that of the scribes and the Pharisees. Your righteousness must exceed that of the Jews. You know, we mustn't resort to behaving in the same way that the Jews do. That's not the way to defeat them, by becoming just like them. You know, we have to defeat them without becoming like them. That's the reason why they are there, is to tempt us into failure and becoming like them. So, you know, our righteousness has to exceed that, and we are capable of doing that as white people. We don't have to behave like Jews. We don't have to be taken in by all their temptations, the temptations to greed and material goods. We can rise above that. We have a spiritual capacity to the white man that just isn't there with the Jew. Whether that's due to God rejecting them, as I believe, or as Dr. E. Michael Jones says, because they rejected Christ. You know, it doesn't matter the reason for it, but they don't have the ability to think in a spiritual way and overcome these temptations. We do have that ability, and we need to not lower ourselves to being like them. The end does not justify the means. You know, the means should be an end in themselves. You know, part of the reason for doing these podcasts is that the ends are a means in themselves. Just by making these podcasts, we are improving ourselves. We are learning about ourselves. We're learning about Christianity. We're learning about nationalism and how to be good people just by making them. At the same time as we're making them, other people are learning along with us. You know, I'm learning from you as we make these podcasts, Florian. So the end should be a means in itself. It shouldn't be, well, we'll make podcasts and we'll lie to people because that way we'll get more people to listen. We'll flatter people and we'll lie to them, and we'll say, oh, it's okay to race mix because then we'll have more people. Or we'll say, oh, it's okay to sleep around because then more people will join nationalism. No, we can't do that. That's not the way to succeed. We succeed if we end up defeating the internal Jew. If we end up overcoming the temptation within us, then, you know, we have won. Jace Turner, he's in prison at the moment, but he won. He won because he was proved correct. He proved that the Jews had this inordinate amount of power, and on their say-so, he was put in prison. Because just by the very fact that he was in court, it proved that what he said was true. And yet he's in prison. But he's got a smile on his face because he defeated the internal Jew. And he proved that they were the ones that were in the wrong. So it doesn't matter even if he is in prison. He is still victorious because he was proved right, and he'll have his reward in heaven. Florian, I think we should probably leave it here before moving on to the next one, because that goes on for quite some way. Next week, we've got something else for you, because I need to take some time off next week. There are some pre-recorded programs on Lost White Civilizations, which I think you're going to enjoy. But Florian, I'm hoping you'll be able to join me the week after, where we can continue this. So thank you for coming on, Florian. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I hope you all have a good weekend. God bless, and hail victory.